Welcome to the Watching World Podcast, a podcast of Abundant Life, whose mission is to see lives changed by Jesus and whose vision is to be living proof of a loving God to a watching world. I'm your host, Les Norman. Thanks for joining us today. And today on the Watching World Podcast, there's a guy that I've been wanting to get in here for a while because every once in a while you find these dudes in life or the girls in life. I don't know the female version of dude, Jason, but dudette. We'll just call him,
Dudette, maybe?
Dudette, yeah. We can go that route. But Jason is a dude. Jason Fenton is joining us, and he's just one of those dudes that's really interesting because I hear bits and pieces from different people, and we work in different areas. You're on staff here. I'm a volunteer, but yet I come here to do the podcast. So we pass each other in the hall, but we haven't really gotten to know each other. So this is, I'm both host and fan today and listener today of the Watching World Podcast because I've just heard so many interesting things. So to introduce Jason Fenton, he is the groups and missions leader here at Abundant Life. So before we begin, it's a little get to know you time, brother.
Okay.
So tell us a little bit about your role here at Abundant Life.
Yeah. Well, first, I hope I live up to that intro. Like, that was epic.
It's so, my specialty, brother.
Yeah. And I'm just boring for the rest of the time.
Not at all.
No. Yeah. So my role at Abundant Life, I wear a couple of hats. And so I'm the groups and missions leader. So what that kind of looks like is for the group side of it, I help recruit coaches and group leaders and kind of form new groups to just kind of really help people get into community. That's one of the big values here at our church at Abundant Life. So there's just always, we're blessed to have tons of people that are coming, that are new, that want to get into community. And so there's always like kind of work to do there to kind of help coach and train and grow. So that's what it looks like on the group side. And on the mission side, really unique season for us because of COVID. Right. We can't go to the nations per se.
Right.
Or if you can, it's just really challenging.
Yeah.
And so we've really kind of, it's forced our hand to look of like what's right here, what's right in front of us. And so we've really emphasized this local missions initiative called Live Sent. And really what Live Sent is, you know, kind of just right off the Great Commission, go therefore and make disciples of all the nations. Right. But what's crazy is God has brought the nations to us. And so we're able to meet our neighbors and the nations at the same time. And so we've kind of developed several teams that really specifically try to target lost cultures in our city, in Kansas City.
The thing that comes to mind for me, Jason, is that in the Bible, Timothy was a young guy. And sometimes Timothy struggled with worrying about his age or what people might think or something like that. And you don't strike me as that. You're definitely a young guy. How old are you?
I'm 31.
You're not 31. You look like you just graduated from high school. If it was for the beard, I would say, dude, winter finals coming up, right, man. It's unbelievable. You got this young face about you. But oftentimes, especially in at least in my experiences, I haven't seen younger guys especially in something like missions or groups or something like that. And I think that's awesome that you're a part of that because you present yourself with energy and with a smile. Now, I've had a nickname in my life. I'm 52. And when I played, people called me Chappy. It was just because I was intense as an athlete, but I didn't want to present that. But you present this welcoming softness about you, and it's very presentable. So I can see it's a good fit, but it's just cool that you're a younger guy that's doing it because is that a big deal with that younger generation of the 20 and 30 somethings getting involved in missions and in groups and being a part of that community?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say it is. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
For one, thanks for saying that. I think it is. You find a lot of people, especially out of COVID or the millennial or Gen Z or whatever, that just kind of really are wanting real relationship. So that's where the community aspect comes in. We're inundated with Twitter and, you know, Facebook, all this stuff. So people really are craving like what we're doing, sitting down, talking to each other. So there is a drive for that. And then on the mission side, the young people are really craving to like not waste their life and do something meaningful with it. So they're kind of, it's weird, but there's a need or desire for that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And there was a title of a book that said, John MacArthur maybe, or don't waste your life.
John Piper.
John Piper. John Piper.
Big missions
guy.
You know the book. Yeah.
Don't waste your life. That I don't even need to really flip that open before I start to feel the conviction and,
sure,
and take a step back and say, Lord, where have I blown it? And how can I move forward not blowing it? So, man, I'm glad you've grabbed a hold of that. So tell us a little bit about you. First of all, I'll ask you, how did you end up coming to Abundant Life?
Yeah. Well, it's It's quite a story. So I know you know Chad Glover.
Absolutely.
Our one of our executive pastors, teaching pastor, one of the main speakers at Paradigm. So I met him maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And after college, I went to Texas A&M, the greatest university in the world.
Ever.
Hey, whoop. And so after that, I moved to Tyler, Texas. I had to get kind of like a I worked at a church for a time. I did a couple of different things, but one of the things I did was working at a church in their college ministry. And then this couple, this you know older couple, came up to me in church one time and said, "Hey, do you want to live with us?" Never met them before. And I
thought, by older, what age are we talking about here?
Like they could be my parents.
Okay,
you know,
so my age.
Yeah, I'd be a little bit older, a little bit older than that.
All right.
Yeah, so they'd be in their 60s now, I guess. But yeah, so they asked me if I wanted to live with them, and I was like, sure. And so I moved in with them. They basically adopted me. Wherever I go, I don't know if it's because, you know, I look like a needy guy, but people want to, like, kind of help me and adopt me. And so this couple, like, I came into their home, and I was a part of their Thanksgiving, just like as if I was their child. And that's Chad's father-in-law and mother-in-law.
Oh, cool.
So Chelsea's parents, Chelsea Glover. And so that's really how I met Chad and Chelsea and the crew. They were over at Thanksgiving or some holiday that like I was required to be at because I'm a part of the family now,
right.
You know? And that's really how Chad and I connected. And so that's how it started and how I got up here. I'm sure we'll get into this later, but I also spent a couple years in South America as a missionary, kind of in the Amazon jungle area. So that's wild.
Literally.
Yeah.
Up in it.
Yeah. And so when I came back, I did a lot of different things, but one of the things I did was I was kind of, for lack of a better term, like a recruiter for missionaries. And so I would go to different ministries, different churches, and kind of talk about, hey, this is what God did while I was there, and here's what you could do. Like, here's how God could use you. And so Chad connected with me and said, hey, would you come and talk at Paradigm, like this event, and kind of share some stories? I got to share a story on Sunday, like with Phil, which was really cool. And so that was my first, I didn't even know where Lee Summit was. I'd never heard of any of this stuff, you know? And so I came and I really fell in love with the church. At the time, I was really isolated. I was working on a ranch in West Texas and doing this part-time recruiting gig. So I saw like maybe 5 people a week.
Wow.
Which, but there was, it was a season in and of itself that was really healthy for me, but I began to kind of feel like I was more than what I'd become, right? I wasn't stewarding my life to the fullest. And after I came here, I tell people this all the time now that I'm on staff, but I'd never been to a place where I felt like God was moving so clearly and people were working so hard to keep up with what God was doing.
Mm.
And I just thought, man, I got to be a part of this. And so I moved up here, not for a job or with a job in mind, really. I got a weed eating job and moved in with some young adults and just started serving at the church, just volunteering. And then I think about 4 or 5 months later, they said, hey, would you consider like joining the team on staff? And I was like, yeah, that'd be awesome.
Wow.
So I tell people all the time, like I traded in a weed eater for a Bible.
There you go. So it seems like that. I mean, that's a story of faith. I mean, because you're moving in with Chelsea Glover's parents. You're working on a ranch. I mean, it's just like, well, this is where I'm going to be. This is where God has me. What's next, God? I'm just going to stay right here and then watch you move. That seems like it's a story of faith.
Yeah, I would say that. I think maybe earlier in my life, like I really wrestled with this, like I want to make, like I'll do anything that God tells me to do, but I'm waiting for him to tell me the specifics of what to do. And it would really kind of cripple me of just like, I don't want to, I know God will bless what, you know, he'll bless me, but I want to make sure I have the fullest blessing, or I want to make the best right decision. And so definitely like later in my life, I feel like God's like, hey, I want you to just go and do so that I can direct. You know, go make a decision in faith. Go make a mistake or whatever so I can guide you and lead you.
You know how scary that is for a lot of people, buddy?
Yeah.
Go and do without details. I mean, my goodness, I know that's exactly what I would need to do in my life, but I would be standing there like, okay, I know you're going to say something else instead of go and do. So yeah. That's incredible. I mean, I find that that you were able to do that is just a, it's a great example of faith and trusting God. So let's, but before we move forward, there's a crazy story here. If you don't know our guest, Jason Fenton, he's a groups and missions leader here at Abundant Life. There's a story here that I find fascinating. The whole thing of watching what God does in someone's life to me is always fascinating. Getting to know people. That's why this segment, Get to Know You, is one of my favorites here on the Watching World podcast, because we just get to uncover stuff that nobody really knows.
Right.
So before we go to that craziness, back up a little bit. Growing up, were you in a Christian home? How did you come to a faith? How did you know that Jesus was the way that you needed to go and live your life?
Yeah, so, man, I've been blessed. So I grew up in Dallas, Texas, or just right outside of Dallas in a suburb. And my father is a pastor. And so he's been the pastor at Meadows Baptist Church for my entire life. Oh. So I think I was born, you know, a couple months before they moved there. And so literally this church has, I'm used to make a joke that half the church has changed my diaper at some point. But like they have really helped me grow up. Mm-hmm. And so I was fortunate to be in the culture of Christianity before I really knew what it meant to be a Christian in my life.
That's interesting.
And so it's a blessing, but there were some unique challenges there. And so I do remember, though, at about 8 years old, kind of having this conviction, because I knew all the knowledge. It didn't click until I was about eight that, man, if I died today, I wouldn't go to heaven with the rest of my family. My sister was babysitting me at the time, and she said, hey, I've got good news for you. And she shared the gospel with me.
Wow.
And helped me walk through that. Dad got to baptize me. So it was a sweet moment. But, you know, the biggest challenges and the biggest mistakes and I would say the biggest sins I've made came after that moment, right? And so after I made that decision and got to grow up in my knowledge and understanding of what it meant to really be a Christ follower, like there was times where I lived in the flesh and there's times where I lived, you know, for Christ. And really college for me was that time to really make my faith my own. Mm-hmm. You know, is this what I believe? Is this what my parents believe? And so there was a grappling, a wrestling there, but God was gracious and brought me into community with some older guys and kind of helped me catch the vision from people that were closer to my age. Because, you know, when you're young, you're an idiot, but you think your parents are idiots too.
It's one of my favorite words because it's truth. You want to see an idiot, find a mirror.
Yeah.
In my life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So that's what it looked like for me. Mm. But
okay. So growing up, we read these stories. You know, we want to be cowboys and we want to be astronauts and we want to be firemen and doctor. We have all these, the president, we want to be, now I'd never want to be the president, but
right.
We all have these illusions of grandeur and this is what we want to be. This is what we want to do. But then also in books or in movies, we see these stories of pirates and exploring and all these different kind of things. And you've kind of lived that. That you've lived that story out. So share a little bit about, I guess, leading up to the whole, I'm going to go to this place. And what was it, a missions thing? What was the idea leading up to it? What was it like? And I don't want to give any little detail. I want you to tell the story, but you had a harrowing experience. I'm going to ask you some questions through the middle of it here and just in how you hung in there. But tell us this amazing, crazy story that you lived out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I guess I'll kind of take us like how I got there initially. So, like I said, grew up in the church, went to college. I got a degree in like ecology. So like ranch management, that's kind of what I wanted to do. Like, you know, kind of be a cowboy essentially. Yeah. And then the summer of my senior year, right before my senior year in college, I went on a mission trip to South Sudan with one of my best friends. And it wasn't an overly spiritual decision. It was more of an adventure, to be honest.
Okay.
But that summer, I mean, we could do a podcast on that summer. I mean, it was the most wild thing. I mean, we had to help refugees get out of the country and ended up getting on UN helicopter. I mean, it was wild.
Dude, you're 31 and the things you've experienced in your life, people are like, man, that'd be awesome just for a second. I mean, we go through life just waiting for experiences like that and you've already lived that.
Oh, I've been blessed. But so that happened and then I came back to school and I'm like, I don't know that I can just go live on a ranch. Like God has stirred something in my heart. Mm-hmm. Not because I'm uniquely gifted, but just because I'm like willing, you know? And so I just couldn't shake that. And
that adventurous spirit in you.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
After college is when I applied to the International Mission Board, the IMB. They have a 2-year program called the Journeyman Program. It's really cool. So if you apply, it's just like a job, and you get accepted, they will fully fund you for those 2 years, and you'll get language acquisition, culture, like missions 101, all that good
training,
stuff.
Training, training, training.
Training, training, training. And then you join a team, a missions team that's somewhere in the world already working, and they're saying, hey, we would love to have, you know, a guy like Jason come in and do X, Y, and Z. And so you're a missionary for those 2 years. And so it's just this incredible experience to really, one, have the support, and then just be able to just run as hard as you can. And so that's what got me there. They matched me with a job. So you get to pick your top three jobs or like positions, I guess, like what you're doing.
Right.
And oddly enough, I did not pick the one that I got placed in. So they thought I would be a really good fit for this, like they called it the extreme team, where you're like trekking through the Amazon, essentially trying to make contact with uncontacted tribes and really facilitate that.
Okay. So that, was there any fear? Was there any thought when that was a possibility, like, oh yeah, I want to do that, but hey, it's, you know, they don't speak our language and they've never been because there are people out there, there are tribes out there that have never talked to the English speaking or maybe any other people except their own tribe, their own people. I mean, was right. that adventurous with a little bit of trepidation? Was it just all in? I want to go.
It was strange. So again, like I shared before, like I used to kind of really struggle with like, God, what do you want me to do in my life? I don't want to mess this up. And so it wasn't like I felt like I was called to be a missionary. It was really clear to me. There was like a Shekinah glory moment where it said, go to the Amazon. I didn't have that.
Right.
It was more of like, the door is opened here. I literally have people that will pay and support me to be a missionary in the Amazon where most people don't want to go.
Right.
I think a big part of being called is just being willing. And so
right.
that's kind of what it was for me. Like the door was open. And so I would say there was more fear about like, is this the right thing to do? Like, I don't want to mess up my life.
So not tigers or snakes and some of the most poisonous snakes in the world
yeah.
and big, you know, literal big tigers and piranha in the water and malaria and mm-hmm. sickness and all different kinds of stuff. You're just like, come on.
Yeah. And maybe it's because I hadn't teased it all out in my mind, but, but part of, I would say a bigger like fear would be failure of just like, man, is this like, am I cut out for this?
That
like, am
sense.
I going to get over there and quit? You know, like whatever. That mm-hmm. was a bigger fear. Or is this the wrong decision? You know, do you want me to go get a job? You know, or just, it was just a different decision.
Well, and that's, I think that's a natural thing. But the thing I like about it is like, the reason I mention it is because in my sometimes small-mindedness, my focus is my comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to confess that, but it's truth. It's real truth. Sometimes I know I might be called to something. I should do it. I want to do it. I'm capable in Christ. I see the gifts he's given me. I can't do it on my own power. It's his gifts. It's everything is him. But then I start to think, well, you know, what if I get sick mm-hmm. or, oh, well, I'd, you know, I kind of like my hotel room versus, you know, sleeping on a rock or something like that. So those are the things I have to get over. So when I mention like tigers and snakes and all that, I'm thinking for me, tigers and snakes
right.
and sickness and stuff
oh
like that.
It's, yeah.
yeah. So I love that part about you. There's that competitiveness in us a lot of times or that fear of failure part or whatever mm-hmm. it may be. I love the fact that you weren't thinking about your comfort. You were thinking just about, I want to do what the Lord wants me to do. I don't want to end up quitting early or something like that. I want to see the course that maybe God has set for me here. So that's really an admirable quality that you weren't thinking that worldly less stuff. You were thinking the stuff that we normally would think about, I guess, in the flesh of, I just don't want to fail.
Yeah. And I don't want to over-spiritualize it.
No, I mean, I'm not trying to.
Part
definitely.
Of it was just too, like, just being like I had anxiety and fear about messing my life up.
Yeah.
You know, like I didn't want to be that person. So not because I like.
I guess my point is that you cared about that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. That's good. Yeah. So that's kind of how I got there. And so once we're there, you want me to kind of just walk through
sure.
what that looks like? Yeah.
Buddy, people are still waiting like, okay, what? I still haven't heard anything yet. That's the crazy part.
Yeah, yeah.
You're gonna.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So just to kind of give some context, I mean, It was a wild 2 years of my life. I mean, we learned language and we tried to do culture acquisition. And so the main mission, if you will, the role that we were there to play is there are about 40 uncontacted tribes that are still present in the Amazon basin area.
Wow.
And if you look at the Amazon.
40. Wow.
40. And the Amazon basin area is about the size of the United States. Just this vast place. But those tribes, like those 40 tribes, are in kind of the most isolated, the like least desirable, hardest to get to, toughest to live in places. And that's why they are still uncontacted. And so what uncontacted means is like there's been no official contact from the outside world. So they may have, you know, brushed up against another village or even raided a village of a contacted tribe, meaning that tribe has interface with a city on the river or a village, you know, like some kind of trading mechanism. But these like uncontacted people, literally what you're picturing, like naked Indians, bow and arrow, like just tip of the spear.
All homemade stuff. They're not going to a surplus store and buying ammo and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They're making everything. They're killing their food.
Absolutely.
They're fishing. They're doing everything they can based on what the land gives them.
Right. And so the thought here, our mission is these people, they don't know Christ. I mean, they don't even know the world, much less, you know, the maker of the world, right? And so what will happen, though, is throughout history, like these tribes will come in, these uncontacted tribes, because it's a hunter-gatherer society, they're nomadic, and they'll come in to an existing village that's stable, that's made contact, that's, for lack of a better term, civilized, and they'll like steal stuff from them. Or, you know, there'll be conflict. And typically when that happens, like someone gets killed. Because the jungle is a very, it's a dark place where fear really breeds. Most of the culture there is animistic, the religious worldview. So they see spirits, they pray to the jaguar, you know, the tree, those kind of things. And so when they're seeing these people, everyone's terrified. And so it usually ends in someone getting killed. And so our whole mission was to come into these existing tribes, the ones that were established, the ones that kind of had made contact and that were taking steps towards a civilized life, I guess you could say. And we would come in, and if there wasn't a church, we would try to establish a church and really kind of give them this discipleship model and even like this missionary mindset. So some of them knew Christ, like I think in the 80s, like there was just kind of like this huge push for evangelism and missions in this area. And so a lot of them had that DNA, but really had no context or clue of what it looked like to live out their faith or even share it.
Right.
And so what we would do is we'd come in, kind of give them that DNA, and then really help prepare them. Like, obviously there's physical needs there, but then like prepare them for what you do when your neighbors that don't know Christ, these nomadic people, come in to your village. Like, let's go through that scenario. Let's prepare you for that. Keep yourself safe, but also evangelistic.
Right.
Yeah. So that's kind of what we're doing.
Protect yourself and love them at the same time.
Right.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. So I feel like that was a lot, but that's the main reason we were there. And it could take us 2 weeks or so to get to one of these villages. We'd take a plane, you take a boat, and then do some hiking. You do all three of those things just
with
to get
a machete
somewhere.
Knocking down wildlife.
Right, just bam, bam. And so once you're there, it takes so much time and resources and effort to get there. You got to hang out for a while. So we would stay for 4 to 5 months at a time in these villages and just live life with these guys.
Wow.
So we would eat what they ate. We would hunt what they hunt. We would drink what they drink.
What's the craziest thing you've ever eaten?
One of the craziest. So I ate a lot of monkeys. In
really?
The jungle. Oh, yeah. Like, I've eaten more monkeys than I've seen in my life.
Wow. Wow.
And this is, everyone asks me, like, what it tastes like. And I would say this, hunger is the greatest spice. So the hungrier you get, the better it all tastes.
One.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so we're doing life with these people. And a couple times a week, we would do story sets. So we would tell stories of the Bible. And that was just kind of this magical code because they're an oral society. And so they would love this podcast because they would love just hearing stories about, you know, hunting or fishing or life in the village or in the jungle and equally like life in the Bible. And so we would highlight these key principles we're trying to drive home through storing, through parables, through stories of Jesus' life. Right. So all that's why we were there. And I think the story that you're referencing, so picture this, like I sign up, I go through 3 months of training. I'm really excited, not really sure what we're really about to go do, but I'm ready for it, right? I'm excited. I've gotten my mind in a place. I've been trained. I speak some language. And so the mission is to go to this village and stay for about 3 months. And this is my first trip out. And I'm with a local guy named Usius, he's an Indian that kind of knows the area, a little bit older, but just kind of knows what's going on. He brings his wife. So it's the three amigos, right? We're going. We jump in a boat for our team. And the plan is it'll take us about 4 days to go. And so as we're going down the river, I don't know if you've ever spent a lot of time on a boat, but after...
Not extended.
Yeah. After, like, I would say, like, 4 hours, it gets pretty boring. And so I found myself... I wasn't driving the boat. I was in the front. And I decided to take a nap. Jesus slept in the boat, right, with his disciples. Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, this is biblical, right? And so I fall asleep, and then I wake up to see that there's like a boat, two boats, like one on either side of us, and we're like kind of going in that direction. So like 100 yards in front of us. I'm thinking, oh, that's kind of weird, you know, because this is a huge, like the river we're on is called the Ucayali. It's twice as wide as the Mississippi River.
Oh, wow, that's big.
Vast.
Yeah.
And as we pull up, we get closer, I can see there's about 5 men in each boat, and they all have masks on, and they all have, like, machine guns. They've all got guns.
Oh, boy.
And I'm thinking, oh, this is strange. But I don't even know enough to know, like, how strange this is, you know? I'm just thinking, oh, maybe this is normal. And so as we get closer, they all jump on our boat and just start screaming at us and, like, pointing their guns at us and, like, had us get on the ground, and they're yelling at us, like, hey, give us your money or we're going to kill you.
Were they speaking English?
This is all in Spanish.
All in Spanish.
All in Spanish. So we would learn Spanish as kind of the trade language to most of these tribes, and these guys were speaking Spanish. And so I can remember, strangely, like kind of being calm. I think maybe because I was still like waking up. Yeah.
Okay.
So like not fully aware of what's going on. And they're laying me down on my back, and I can feel the guns like poking my back, and we keep telling them, like, we don't have any money, because we really didn't. We just had a lot of supplies, and we didn't, like, bring money to the jungle. Like, there's not a lot of need for that. And so they get so frustrated that they decide the best thing to do is to split us up. And so they take my partner and his wife, put them in one of their boats, and then some of the, I would call them river pirates, they came in to our boat, to my boat, and then, like, we all took off in different directions. And that was kind of the moment, I guess I'm like fully awake at this point. I'm like, oh, wow.
I've just been kidnapped.
Yeah, this is not good. And I can remember just thinking, like, Lord, like, I should pray. This is the time to pray. And so I did. I just said, God, would you help us know what to do? Like, we're here trying to, you know, be on mission for you. So, like, you're in control. Just give us the words to say. Like, help us find favor with these guys and keep us safe, you know? And So
that's good. I want to pause real quick right there.
Yeah.
And right away, your first inclination wasn't fear. Well, I'm sure there might have been some fear there or whatever, but just to stop and pray.
Yeah.
I mean, it's huge. That's a life lesson. 99.99999% of us are not going to be kidnapped by pirates in a foreign country.
Hopefully not.
But at any time, good, bad situation, not just in a situation like that, but the response is prayer. Mm. And that's an excellent, I would say. I highly recommend doing what you did in that moment and just pray.
Yeah. And it wasn't my first inclination, right? Like, it kind of, I get through the story and then I'm like, oh, I should be praying.
But you're in there though. I mean, it's, you know.
Sure. Sure. And so after that prayer, I tried to rack my brain, because we'd gone through tons of training, like contingency training. What do you do when things don't go well, you know? And so we'd gone through like scenarios of kidnap, you know, hijack, all this stuff. And I can't remember anything. So I'm like, oh, shoot.
Blanked out.
Yeah, except I finally remembered one thing. They said, hey, you should try to humanize yourself with your captor to remind them that you're a human just like they are.
That's good.
You kind of evoke sympathy from them by helping them remember, like, oh, this is a person. And one of the best ways to do that is to ask for stuff. And so they, like, gave the example of, like, asking for water. And I was like, okay. So I'm like, hey, can I have some water? So I'm like talking to these guys. And finally, one of them gives me water. I was still like on the ground at this point. And so they let me sit up and gave me some water. And I began to kind of talk to one of these guys in the little Spanish that I had learned, you know. And he told me at one point, this is very strange. He said, hey, don't worry. Everything's going to be fine. We're just going to take all your stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay. That's good. All I right. guess. Yeah.
Did and you so, trust that?
I didn't know what to think. I'm just like, okay, at least I'm sitting up. We, you know, I'm trying to take
step
the steps
in the right direction.
Yeah. Because you're thinking through, like, do I jump out of the boat? Like, do I try to fight these guys? Like, what do I do here, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just felt like, well, let's just see what happens. And so eventually, about 30 minutes later, we all meet back up in this cove off the main river. And so part of me was like, man, this is great. You know, my partner's there. Everyone's still safe. Everyone's still alive. So that was kind of like a praise. But then I also realized, like, hey, whatever's about to happen, nobody's going to see because we're off the main river. And so you kind of have this feeling of like, man, this would be a great place to die. You know, like you just really kind of feel that sense. And so we pull in and these guys, these river pirates, if you will, jump on our boat and like start just taking all of our stuff, just systematically rifling through our stuff, taking everything. And they're still like pretty aggressively yelling at us to give them, you know, the money. And we're like, man, we don't have any money, you know? And so as they're taking our stuff, I really do feel like the Lord, the Holy Spirit just gave us this sounds crazy. It gave us the spirit of boldness because we don't have any guns. We don't even have what they're asking for. But we begin to kind of like talk to them and say, hey, like the reason we don't have any money is because we're going to these villages to tell people about Christ and we're going to live there for, you know, 3-4 months. Have you ever heard about Christ? And so, like, literally, as these guys are, like, carrying
stepping
our stuff.
Stepping into witness mode.
Yeah. So we begin to share this story, the story of Christ with them. They, you know, Jesus came down. He's fully God, fully man, yada, yada, all this stuff. As they're, like, carrying our stuff off. So it's really funny. And so some of them are listening, and some of them, like, could not care less, right?
Right.
And as this goes on, like, we begin to, like, feel even more bold, which it just sounds crazy saying that. But I remember at one point we said, hey, you need to be really careful with this stuff. And they're kind of like, well, why? You know, we said, because this stuff doesn't belong to us. This stuff actually belongs to God. Like these are God's things. Total Jesus juke, you know?
Believe it. I love it. I love it.
And
the Jesus
this,
juke.
Yeah. This really freaked them out. And so like so much so that about, you know, 2-3 minutes later, they kind of circle up and come. They all come approach us and we're like, oh. This, I don't know what this is, you know, kind of nerve wracking. And they say, hey, we want to apologize for what happened. We don't have a lot of money and our families, like we kind of need this stuff to feed our families. And so, will you forgive us and will you pray for us?
Wow.
And
wow.
Yeah. So just like total 180, I'm like, okay. Yeah, of course we will. And so we pray with these guys. We kind of like make peace in this moment. And they still have like all of our stuff though. So we're kind of like, hey, like, because at this point we're thinking, okay, well, I guess we're not going to get killed. That's a plus. And we say, hey, like, would you be willing to give us our stuff back so that we can go and tell other people about Jesus? Because they got to hear the gospel. They knew the gospel, some of the gospel, but not fully. And right. So for the first time, they really had knowledge of the Father whom stuff they were actually stealing.
Right.
So it was a really cool moment. And so they kind of huddle around after we ask them this and finally come back to us and say, yeah, we'd be willing to do that. So they gave us back a good portion of our stuff, not all of it.
Right.
They still kept a good portion of it as well. And so we kind of part ways or like make peace one more time. And it's this weird moment. It's like, I feel like we're close, but also feel like you still kidnapped me and like threatened to kill me. And
my life was at the end of your trigger finger.
Right. And you have half of my stuff still. So, yeah. but it was this weird moment. And so we kind of make peace and then they head out, like they leave, but they still kept so much of our stuff that we weren't able to go where we wanted to go. Cause it was like a 4-day journey there.
Yeah.
And so what we ended up doing is we floated downriver and landed in a village and got to spend the night there. And this is the last thing I'll say, but it took us about 40 gallons of gas to get to where the river pirates' found us or whatever.
Sure.
And we, they only gave us about 5 gallons Ooh. To get back upstream. And so it's like, this is impossible, really. But what other choice do we have, you know? And so sure. we float down, we spend the night at this village. The next morning we get up, we pray. We like, you know, pray with the village and thank them for hosting us. And then we head back to base camp because we didn't have enough to like really do anything.
Sure.
And we made it all the way back on 5 gallons of gas.
Wow.
It's hard to describe how much of a miracle that was in our life because we were like, the last thing we want is to be back in the same situation.
Sure.
With no fuel.
And less stuff. That somebody might take.
Yeah. And so it was a miracle. We came back. We kind of licked our wounds, so to speak, replanned, regrouped. And then a week later, we took a float plane to that desired village we were trying to go, end up staying there for several months. A couple people came to Christ. So it was a cool time.
God is so good. So let me ask you one quick question before we sign off here. Jason Fenton's our guest. He's a groups and missions leader here at Abundant Life. What did you learn from it? What did God teach you through that whole experience?
I would say what I learned is God is always at work and he's good at his job.
Very good at his job.
Yeah.
Jason, man, thanks. There's so much more to you than your amazing, crazy story of being kidnapped by pirates. You're the only person in my life ever in 52 and a half years and probably will be the only person that I've ever met that's been kidnapped by pirates.
Yeah.
But yet, I thank you for what you do here at Abundant Life and for sharing your story and just for that piece about you. I mean, community, not everybody dives into community. So many people have wounds, have things that's happened to them. They may be closed off. There's that little bit of hesitation or whatever, but I just love the way you love people. I noticed that from the outside. And so I just want to give you that compliment that you're using God's gifts well and being obedient to him and just loving on people. Like you said, man, it's just, there's an open door. It's opportunity. Just be obedient and step through it. Whether you're trained or not, God will give you, you know, the Holy Spirit will fill you with what you need at the time. So thanks for all you're doing, man. And don't get kidnapped anymore.
I'll try.
But if you do, you have experience in how to deal with it.
That's right. That's right. Thanks, Les. Thanks
absolutely.
For having me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks for being here. Jason Fenton's our guest. Again, he is the groups and missions leader here at Abundant Life. And if you want to find out more about missions, go to livingproof.co. On the right side, it'll say more, and you can click on that, and this whole thing will come up, and you can find missions on there or any other thing at Abundant Life. Again, that's livingproof.co. On behalf of Jason Fenton, I'm Les Norman. Thanks for joining us today here on the Watching World Podcast.